Robert J. Smith graduated from BYU in accounting and business administration in 1948. In 1949, he returned with an MBA degree from Northwestern University to become an assistant professor in the accounting department here. Brother Smith was cited that year for having the highest grades in the nation in the CPA examination. He's been here ever since, with time off from 1955 to 1957 to get his doctorate at Indiana University. Of his coming from Arizona to BYU, Brother Smith has said, "Whatever inspiration led many years ago to the decision to go to BYU rather than the University of Arizona, where most of my siblings had gone, has shaped the course of my life in many ways. This university and its sponsoring church have provided the pivotal influences in all decisions and in all activities since that seemingly unimportant decision was made." Robert J. Smith was born in Snowflake, Arizona, on Christmas Day in 1920, the 12th of 13 children. He is the youngest son of a youngest son of a youngest son. His grandfather, Jesse N. Smith, was the Prophet Joseph Smith's youngest cousin. Bob grew up in Snowflake and in 1942 went on a mission to the southern states. As mission treasurer, he was called upon before his release to train his replacement. The trainee was a sister missionary from Utah, Sister Lola Nielsen. The training session must have gone very well, because upon his return home, he sent her a diamond, which she accepted. It was not until her mission was completed 7 months later, however, that they had their first date and that Bob spoke for the first time in her presence of his love for her. Typical of the propriety of their lives, nothing had been said in the mission field and only letters had served following Bob's release. They were married on her birthday, November 5th, 1945, and so this month their family has celebrated a double anniversary. Always active in the church, President Smith has served as Bishop of the Oak Hills 3rd and the BYU 25th Wards and as President of the BYU 8th Stake. For 13 years, he has worked with the United Way of Utah County. He is currently Controller of the Utah National Parks Council of the Boy Scouts of America. The Smiths have 8 children. 6 of them have graduated from BYU and the other 2 are currently students here. The family is awaiting their 20th grandchild. Brother Smith, we love you and welcome you to this podium.
After that lovely music and that introduction, I feel rather inadequate for this, but I think that a special day for Thanksgiving is an appropriate thing for us, although we really ought to be thankful for all of our blessings always. The Lord suggests, even more than suggests, He commands that we be thankful in all things. For example, in modern Revelation, reiterating in our day some of the basic commandments given through Moses, we read, "Thou shalt thank the Lord thy God in all things." A few verses later in the same section, after counsel on fasting and prayer, a reward for faithful obedience coupled with thanksgiving is promised. "And inasmuch as ye do these things with thanksgiving, with cheerful hearts and countenance, the fullness of the earth is yours." May I share with you some verse that deals with the significance of Thanksgiving Day. Thanksgiving means a lot of things to different ones I know. To some it means a wintry day with gusty wind and snow. Some others see a sunny day, a warm and balmy time, with flowers growing in the yard and orange trees or lime. Some see a colored autumn scene, a white and frosty morn, with yellow pumpkins in the field and rusty rows of corn. To some, it's just another day, and toil the body saps. No chance to look ahead to see a holiday, perhaps. To some, it means a day to stuff with turkey, sauce, and pie. They eat so much it really hurts. Then on the bed they lie. Those football scenes, games, and constant stream on television screens take up the day from morn till night. At least that's how it seems. But few there are who see this day as one on which we kneel in thanks to God for countless things that should us to Him seal. Our health, our wealth, our freedoms dear, our family and our friends, the joy of living in this day, the list just never ends. The pilgrims felt it worth the time to set aside a day to think of God and thank Him too in their own simple way. We too should give to Him above a day from busy life, a day when we can think of Him without internal strife. Just pause and ponder on the name, Thanksgiving Day. It ranks as one we make a holiday, a special day for thanks. This year, as I contemplated Thanksgiving, or more accurately, this talk for Thanksgiving, I recall some background from the past which has led to many things which I am now grateful for. I realize that few things come into our possession full-blown without roots in the past. Great new ideas, even those arising out of flashes of inspiration, are most often rooted in our experience and background from the past. Similarly, much that we enjoy in terms of material conveniences, family tradition, and educational methods and aspirations develop from past roots. At Thanksgiving time, it is appropriate for us to pause to contemplate a little of the road behind us, that the road ahead might have more meaning. This morning, we meet in a beautiful large facility with multiple purposes, but in season emphasizing basketball competition. There are still in existence facilities for basketball which brought us to this comfortable and commodious building. On 6th North and 1st East is an old building, the upper floor of which was once BYU's men's gymnasium. Within two blocks of that, on University Avenue, is the old gymnasium for women where intercollegiate basketball games were once played. I will well remember BYU's home games in the Springville High Gymnasium so that more students and others might enjoy this competitive sport. Many at BYU now remember the tremendous enthusiasm with which the opening of the great new facility was accompanied, the George Albert Smith Fieldhouse, where most of the games of the Stan Watts era were played. Today's generation of students knows only this 22,000-seat facility, now one of the finest and largest in the nation. Our assemblies in my student days have migrated, from College Hall on the lower campus to the Joseph Smith Auditorium, to the George Albert Smith Fieldhouse, and to the Marriott Center. Other university functions have seen like change. Our present bookstore was preceded by another in the Harold R. Clark building, which in turn was preceded by facilities in a temporary barracks building, and for those of more ancient vintage, a cubbyhole in the basement of College Hall on the lower campus. Although I do not really consider myself old, I have experienced a variety of methods of space heating. Many armloads of wood I personally carried to provide fuel for a stove which served three purposes: cooking, water heating, and space heating. I have had some experience with fireplace heating, coal heaters, coal furnaces, fuel oil, but now use a convenient electrically controlled gas furnace. The current return to wood stoves does not hold the glamour for me that it might for some others. In my early youth, we carried water from the well across the street and also used water which came off the roof in rainstorms. I've seen the installation of a water line in a small community which brought cold water to the kitchen sink. Water was heated in a tank on the wood stove and later by coils which were attached to a separate hot water tank. Of course, it's much more convenient to have natural gas or electricity as a source of fuel to provide hot water at any time, day or night. I have studied under the light of kerosene or coal oil lamps. I went through an era when we used a single barrel electric bulb in the center of the room. And now we use specialized lamps, fluorescent and indirect lighting. All of these experiences give appreciation for what we presently enjoy and a sense of wonder as to what the future may bring. Some traditions, such as membership in the church, may have several generations behind them, such as mine, whereas many of the student body at BYU find themselves as the first generation in building a tradition of membership in the Lord's restored church. Without being exhaustive, for example, many of my progenitors joined the church in its early days. My great-grandfather, Silas Smith, was baptized in 1835. And his father, Asel Smith, had received with gladness the news of the restoration of the gospel through his grandson, Joseph Smith, Jr., which he felt was a fulfillment of one of his own prophecies. Two of Silas's sons accompanied their widowed mother to Nauvoo and later across the plains, arriving in Salt Lake Valley in September of 1847. These two both had very large families. The youngest of the two was my grandfather. Samuel Walker West and his family embraced the gospel in Tennessee and in 1842 migrated to Nauvoo and later moved west with the saints. His daughter, Emma Seraphine West, pioneered in southern Utah and northern Arizona, and her youngest son was my father. My grandfather, Lorenzo Hill Hatch, was baptized in February 1840 at the age of 15 in Vermont. The same year, his father, mother, grandfather, and grandmother all joined the church. Lorenzo's mother died in Vermont. His father died in Nauvoo in 1843. His grandparents died in winter quarters in Council Bluffs. But Lorenzo and two brothers began a large Hatch posterity in the church. His fourth wife, Alice Hansen, with other members of her family, joined the church in England in 1854. As a 19-year-old young lady, she sailed to the United States and then walked across the plains in a handcart company. Her youngest child is my mother. The faith, devotion of these ancestors have influenced family tradition and life and have obviously influenced my feelings and attitude. But in the final analysis, for me, the same as for anyone coming into the church, whether fifth generation or first, the conversion process was personal and individual. Some things don't change in quite the same way as others, but we still build on the contribution of others. Who doesn't remember some influential teacher in his life who changed the course of thinking or the direction one has taken? Three or four of my high school teachers are fondly remembered. They greatly influenced my learning and my desire for a college education. Much has happened at BYU during my 34 years of employment, plus another 10 years acquaintance with the university. During my student years, including the interim periods while working, serving a mission, and completing a term in the military service by invitation of our government. Five presidents have made their marks on Brigham Young University in that period. Many teachers have sacrificed much to contribute to the ongoing flow of development. You have heard the names of many. But let me suggest a few names that may not be as familiar to you, but who, in my opinion, have contributed greatly to my own growth and have greatly influenced my career. Harold R. Clark, H. Val Hoyt, A. Smith Pond, Joseph K. Nichols, Weldon J. Taylor, Wayne B. Hales, Sidney B. Sperry, Robert K. Thomas, and the list could go on. Others here would have a similar but different list. Perhaps most of you have someone whom you have known or currently know who has influenced you in such a way that they might fit the model so well described by my eldest sister in a tribute to our mother. Quote, "We need not search among the recounted deeds of the great to find life's intimate expressions. Her meaningful messages are truly reflected in the humble life of each individual. From the common everyday experiences of humanity, existence moves in the boundless realms of eternity. And so from the life happenings of one fragile being, may other personalities be enriched and courage be summoned in the struggle of making human relationships more understandable and pleasant. Such is the aim of every noble soul." End quote. As enjoyable as a look back may be, and certainly we should look back and be thankful for those persons and those developments which have brought us to our present state, we need to be thankful that we are endowed with the power to act, the power to think, responsibility to do things of our own free will and choice. We should be grateful that we live in a land wherein individual initiative and rights are still accepted principles. We can make individual and collective contributions. We can begin that which for others may become tradition and history. In our generation, we can hold the lamp of progress in our hand and pass it to the coming generation. At this Thanksgiving time, may the brief glance behind to sources of our traditions and current blessings give us determination to carry on, to build, to grow, to contribute to the progress of mankind. Particularly, may we further the eternal purposes and work of our Father in heaven, that we might be worthy of the blessings promised to those who devotedly and faithfully pursue the principles of the gospel, that we might have joy and might have in our lives the fruits of the Spirit described by Paul: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. That this might be our blessing, I pray humbly in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.